Alright, Mirror University office hours, the final hour. If you want to call in now, 602-666-6027. We're going to be competing with Bob Dobbs, but, don't worry, he'll let you talk. He'll let you talk too. So, if we can open up the callers now, I know, Jack McClinton had his hand raised, and, I was trying to work him in, but we kind of got going, each of us on our own thing. So maybe bring Jack in, and,
let me run through a couple of points of what was said in my notes. So, Clinton, how old were you in 2008?
I would have been 20. 19, okay. Turning 20.
So you were where was these forums that were so influential? The Manipian Marxists, what was the name of the forum? Where were they in 2008?
Well, most of this stuff would have happened on the Something Awful web forums now. That would have been, it's paywalled. You got to pay $10 to get in. So it's sort of like the secret cool kids club that you had to have a credit card to get into. Now, the Something Awful web forums, they're huge, very important, but also because you got to pay money to get in, lots of people went to 4chan instead. Everyone talks about 4chan. Everyone went to 4chan because it was free and it was anonymous. But the Something Awful forums, more important. They birthed 4chan. But, that's where all the intellectual, there were rules at Something Awful. It wasn't some anarchy like 4chan is. You using Something Awful web forums, you gotta use proper punctuation. You gotta use full sentences.
Right.
You can't fuck around. You gotta be, intellectual. You gotta source your shit. So that way all these ironic, now, that's not every sub, that's lots of subs. If you wanna participate in most of the site, you gotta follow these rules. But there's also these anarchic parts. These anarchy parts of the website where you can fuck around and do whatever the hell you want as well, right? Different sections. Different stories.
Okay, that's
folks.
Good. I've heard you talk about something awful, so that's where that is. Manipian. Okay, these Marxists, I think you're seeing from the 90s on the popular pagan population becoming more and more Manipian when they went on whatever those crazy Jerry Springer and the other guy talk shows. You have this Manipian is satirizing the audience, so there's a lot of attacking the audience of in all directions. So the larger trend is everybody's becoming a Manipian. The Trump election was a Manipian election by the population. Okay? Then I would add, so you're saying these people are very influential. Yes, I've heard you talk about something awful before. It's interesting, the Sarah Palin phenomenon, Camille Paglia got sucked into the Palin thing, thought she was some icon for future developments. It disappeared. Interesting how things come and then go. Now, Zach, yeah. I'm addressing you, Zach. Thank you, Clinton. When you say, as a kid, you went into every underground group or fad, you went from one to another, I would think that you're fascinated with tactility. So I want to point out, for those who don't know, that tactility is not touch. It's the gap when you let go and then retouch. Tactility is the gap, the non-touching part. So, Zach touched on an underground group, got upset or disappointed or thought it was dull, then he unhooked and went to another underground fad. And he did a whole sequence of them. There might be more to talk about that.
Yeah, just real quick. That's sort of the Deleuzian, like, body without organs, desiring machines, or even like the Guy Debord Derive concept where you just kind of flow. It's even like a bit like yoga, even if it's like Americanized, like Crowleyan psychopathic yoga. It's like, just try to like pure being, to move around. And yeah, in a sense, I would check out these scenes because I really like, I like the quadrivial stuff. I grew up in a very musical family. And not only he played music, but he played me a lot of records. That's my earliest memories is being like addicted to these records, just watching them spin.
Yeah.
So what often happened was I would, go to these scenes and I would really appreciate the music, even if it was stuff I didn't like. It would still kind of teach me some stuff. And, I would just never get on with the people. And more than I would get upset, the people would get really upset at me for having a foot still in like, what I assume the old world knowledge was. I was really, even as a teenager, I was, I took Latin, I studied Greek in high school, I went to church, So I, even though I was obsessed with the counterculture and like just kind of weird sound and energy in general, I didn't like the whole dropout attitude. And that's, I think, I'm not going to go on about this, we can do it at a different time, but I think that's why it hit me a bit later than it did with a lot of my friends. I saw my friends like burning their minds with LSD at 13. I didn't really smoke weed till like 17, 18. It wasn't until I did a little bit of college, and that just kind of smacked me in the fucking face and was like, this is not really the world I want to jump into, that I kind of fully signed on to the losership crap. The losership was just always too much for me. It was too much for me to these scenes ask you to like sign your soul away. It's really ridiculous.
Okay, that's good. And back to Clinton, who advised the 1944 video? Any of the famous names back then?
Oh, well, it was worked on by Disney, but this is wartime propaganda. So this is...
Is Von Neumann part of this?
Neumann.
Von Neumann. John Von Neumann.
John Von Neumann. No. See, so this video that you're going to start off with, it's a training video for Air Force pilots, and it's telling them that they are going to be... computers are controlling the guns that are firing flak at them, and they have to dodge... Right, they have to project their own plane as existing in the Cartesian space being mapped by the planes and how to fly, such as to outwit the computer, like how the computer is calculating where to shoot at them and how they have to fly to best be, to best survive the anti. So it's all very practical. It's all for, dumb guys who know how to fly an airplane and not much more. It's got funny cartoons in it. Wartime propaganda, because it's a military training video. It had nothing to do with the cyberneticists as such.
Okay. All right. And when you bring up Krishnamurti, there's a guy named U, initial U and then G, Krishnamurti. I recommend a book by Bob Carr called God Men, Con Men. He went through the Krishnamurti world and then the UG Krishnamurti, and YouTubes of UG Krishnamurti were made by Bob Carr, and he got involved with Bollywood in India, who were followers of UG. So I think I mentioned that last week, but it should be, one should check out UG's reaction, the longtime devotee of Jiddu Krishnamurti, who then rebelled against Krishnamurti and became his own cult. And then when you, Blake's talking about Padabe Joyce and the other guy, did they, are you talking about a phenomenon weaponizing yoga, Blake? Is that fit in the 90s?
I guess so. I think it does.
Yeah, that's an interesting, in Yoga Mala, Padabe Joyce's book, he actually ends, I believe, the book with an exhortation against the use of yoga for militaristic purposes. He says, if you train soldiers with these methods, you're gonna make a really dangerous army. So we, as an Indian, he was like warning against the nefarious applications of these traditional sciences.
Right. Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say that I said Krishnamurti was the beginning of the counterculture, so it occurred to me, or I reminded myself of this thought, I've thought a lot through the years, is when electric technology comes in, it's the beginning of electric, what I call electric autonomy. So people had cars, so they could drive away from their little tribes. Women had bicycles, not electric, but that was the beginning of it. Women could drive out of their villages and go out in the country and walk around with only clothes on. So the bicycle gave people an autonomy, technological autonomy, and then those bike paths became the paths for cars, the first cars. So then you look at radio, that has a big collective effect, but each electric technology allows people not only to become discarnate, but to start being in their own fantasy land. So if the counterculture is people finding their own pathless, pathless to truth, or no standard path to truth, the electric technologies that keep coming keep breaking up the chemical body community. And so that's what counterculture is, riding on the latest electric technologies and digital technologies to disconnect from chemical body tyranny or oral-based cultures or litter-based. So that's a pattern to remember, to applying McLuhan to Krishnamurti and what he started. And then sex magic, is that the kind of stuff that Osho had in Oregon? Or is it just a guy screwing the women?
Sure. Yeah,
who calls sex magic?
Well, Crowley. I mean, that's the...
Yes.
Just, it's like Western Tantra, basically, right? Where you,
right, but I know
you
that.
You do all what the things that are prescribed, so.
Right, so you're saying there are many yoga groups that prescribe sex magic.
Well, traditionally it's, one of the yamas is brahmacharya, which is usually taken to mean conservation of the semen. Retention, like, semen retention.
Right.
I mean, that's the tantric, I guess that's more of the tantric. It traditionally means abstention from sexual gratification, like self-gratification, right?
Yeah.
So there is a kind of, link there to the sort of celibacy of the priest, right?
So what do you call, when Osho, you know, starts talking, screwing all the women in the group, or other guys like, the Sri Trinmoy guy I was thinking of, what is that? That's not sex magic.
Well, it was in Osho's case, as far as I, as far as I know, Osho, became increasingly paranoid and isolated as that cult really got underway, in, after they moved to Oregon there.
Yeah.
But, certainly a lot of people gravitate to sex magic who are, you know, looking for, people to, manipulate, looking for a kind of power that, that affords, especially over young people, you know.
Yeah.
It's also people who want to be manipulated, you know, people who have like a real void, and like this just culture in general sells us that like sex is the answer. You know, just trying to sell us that, they actually sell us that like violence and abuse under the guise of sex is the answer. But, yeah, I mean, even in my case, like a lot of the yoga weirdos I know are just like coomers who just like want to have like sex with everybody. They have like fucking, they're swingers essentially. But they say om every few days and like stretch to.
Right, limber up.
Well, it's okay. It's, when you get into your body, when you get sort of, if you're discarnate, if you're used to being discarnate.
Yeah.
You know, as a, having been bombarded by electronic media, you, getting back into your body can be a really kind of a dangerously real experience. So there's a lot of stories of like, accidentally awakening the Kundalini energy and having it basically short your circuits, your neurological circuits. And, so the traditional practices for doing this are designed to kind of gradually transform and transduce this energy in a controlled way. The gratification of orgasm is a kind of, you know, the French call it a little death. Right?
Yeah, that's what, yeah, that's
an apt, it's an apt figure for instant gratification in general. That's sort of a consumer value.
It also goes with the brahmacharya as well, where you kind of realize that the seed itself is life. You know, I think Christians will probably think this is like blasphemy, but the seed itself is the Logos. That's Christ, you know? That's why they tell us to spit it out like 9 times a day. And so if you start, If you try to practice the brahmacharya, you realize that like orgasm doesn't even feel good, to be honest. It actually feels like just deathly. It feels like you're spitting out your energy that you need. I see you know, the writings I've read on this about the yamas and stuff is, it like you said, it's more just a tuning process where you start getting there. And I think there's a lot in, like, Willem Reich and just post-Freudian Marx, but, like, the whole Freudian Marxo thing is really all about orgasm. I mean, this is about capital. It's just in this orgasmic sense, and it's hard to deny it, right? It's like kind of like the NOFAP thing, where it's just like a military aggression, like hate yourself and your body. Don't actually do any yoga and figure shit out. So I think there's a lot. I've been thinking about it the last like month or two. This whole little death thing and how just literal that is. Like you stop breathing when you have an orgasm. You pant. You actually kind of die for a second, and then you feel. You feel a small regeneration of sorts, probably from the seed that doesn't come out, in a sense, the way it feeds back into to your bones and muscles and things like that.
Okay, good. So then maybe the final, second last thing, Chris, I want to hear you talk to Ion about the completion of pi, the balancing of it, and see what that does to your system or what you were talking about. So I'm looking forward to someday you bringing up your knowledge system with the new altering of pi or completion of it. Okay, Chris?
Sure. That would be real exciting to see how, you know, just in the modular modality notion of creating just a slack in my own thinking, right?
Right. Okay, that's good enough.
Yeah.
I just want to have mentioned that. And then I think we mentioned, Zach mentioned last week, we want to talk about Adam Curtis's new documentary. I found a panel, these intellectuals talking about it, so I'll post that. But a key point for me rewatching it is I think it's in the last episode 6, which is 2 hours. So it's I think it's 7 hours total unless you – this panel was saying was 8 hours, but it's at least 7. He says that Carnahan, whatever that famous psychologist's name was, who learned how to manipulate people.
Daniel Kahneman.
And, what?
Daniel Kahneman.
Right, and he gets a Nobel Prize, and then in the documentary he realizes or he finds out that new research shows that people can't be manipulated, can't be conditioned, and he finds it's quite a crisis for him. And psychology, well, I say the Android meme is not talking to people. It's talking to other parts of its computerized extensions. So I was thinking that Curtis missed the point that it's not that people aren't programmed. They are not being talked to anymore, and they maybe pick up on that. So they just float about. So when we do Adam Curtis, I'm going to bring up how I see a validation by this new research of my intuition that the Android meme is not talking to anybody. So I want to register that. And then
that's a really good read. If I could just say something quick about Adam Curtis, I was on a podcast this weekend that hasn't aired yet called System of Systems. And this guy Adam Lehr, and this young Zoomer who was really, really deep. I forget his name. I feel bad, but he was like 19 and blowing my fucking mind, man. They hosted it, and one of the topics was the Adam Curtis thing. And it was just nice to get a read on how people are picking up on this new one. And everyone is just kind of like, holy shit, this is just propaganda. This is just fucking propaganda. This guy doesn't really get anything right. You know, it's sort of funny. He was like the hero of the radical left 4 years ago. And this new doc, I mean, it has liberals being like, he doesn't understand Donald Trump right, you know? So
yeah.
People are saying, he fucking works for the BBC. He works for the BBC. Like, why should we trust any of this, you know? And I think people realize, too, like, Adam Curtis does trust himself, that he's not just a full-on faker in the situation. But, you know, it's a bit screwy.
Right, and this panel is quite critical of them, so that's interesting. So I'll post that on my Facebook page or Fake Explorations. Okay, so I'm done. Let's open the line, see what people have to say. Let me see. I got here. Oh, he got, Illinois, Mr. Illinois, and little Sarah. You want to speak, Mr. Illinois?
If Jack's still there, can you let him in, or he may be gone?
No, Jack may be gone. He may have had to do something.
Okay.
Okay, let's assume Mr. Illinois. What is Mr. Illinois' name?
I don't know if he's called Breezy. Yeah.
Breezy, okay. Now, maybe he dropped off. Little
I'll
Sarah,
say a few things. Oh, I'm here. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Little Breezy.
There we go. Yep, Diggy, Waterworks, Breezy, Stardust.
Yeah.
So I was going through the janitor's closet at the department in near you, and I found these clay tablets, and I was hoping I'd pour some salt over them and then scratched a piece of crystal across it, and then the sound tone started coming out. And I just figured it was the Near You anthem. So, can I play a piece of it?
Yep.
Of course. I want to explain it, how that happened. Our friends at the CIA actually composed that for Mirror University because we need a true entrainment anthem, a true Project Bluebeam 440 entrainment. I'm pretty sure they knocked on someone's door the other morning and dropped that off and sent them into a fucking state of panic. But, I mean, that would happen to anyone, you know, just getting like some weird tablets and shit like that with like crazy blue-beamed instructions with what to do. So I'm just glad we have a janitor who can see that through a bit, you know. I think some of the other ones have maybe lost their job when the blue beam hits them. But you just want to let people know, you know, like we're dealing with entrainment here. We're dealing with the demon channels and the bad frequencies. So I got to put the warning out there. If you don't want to listen, you know, you don't have to. But like we said earlier, you just got to tune. When you tune correctly, you can kind of sit with these demon channels, and they're not so serious. You know, they're just good teachers.
Right, but what did he technically scrape?
I believe it was a stone delivered to him, and he put water on it and a crystal. Yeah. I mean, it's alchemy. I don't know if he can really describe it exegetically. I think it's just alchemical.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. I love the show. I'm gonna do my homework for next week.
That's what's up. You know, like, I know your dog's probably gonna eat it. That's all right. We're kind of used to that. You can even give us back the puke, if you want, like, proof of homework munched, you know? But,
the file already went into the trash compactor, so. But, alright, that sounds good, guys, alright?
Yep. Thank you, man.
Peace out, guys.
Thank you for keeping in touch with the Glowies. The Glowies fund us. So.
Thank you, professors.
Of course.
University!
Yeah, who are we playing this weekend? Purdue?
Oh.
Michigan State? Who are we playing?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Going up against Curtis. We're going up against Curtis.
Well, you know, Curtis is a fucking mouth breather. I heard in his Red Scare interview, people are just kind of like, I can't listen to this Adam Curtis guy because he just fucking breathes too hard. And that's like, that's bad if you're in public. Ouch.
And Glenn Greenwald has all this mucus in his mouth. You can't listen to him.
Greenwald's a little creepy, man. He's a total fed. He's a total, actual on the payroll agent. Him and Tucker Carlson hanging out, you know. They're actual plan.
Detox center.
They're four humors, guys. Use them all.
Yeah, right?
Four corners.
Anybody, me and Nelson used to say in Steve Callen back in the 80s, anybody's on TV is an agent.
Yeah, well, that's kind of that
TV.
They all are. That's true. And, you know, I honestly think that most of them don't know, but there is, of course, a percentage who really, really knows and is really having fun with this, like, perceptive hellscape that we kind of float around in and we think is reality, you know? I mean, it just in a real, like, literal sense, you know, being a kid in the 80s, media world was really extreme, you know, but there was still like this way to jump into it and be like, you know, floating through the galaxy of whatever while you're watching fucking He-Man or some garbage, right, and Ninja Turtles, and then you can just take it back to like the backyard and like have like some real like peaceful like Jeff German moments, right? It's gotten a lot different now where it's gotten different, but in a way by where they've, you know, like with this Donald Trump, like reality programming game, this QAnon shit, it's really like a 1980s fucking movie, just done out very slow in real time. And I don't think I think actually everyone realizes that because I think people are very perceptive, just have a lot of stuff in the way. And I think that's what gets them so angry in a sense. They just kind of know that like, everything that's kind of been going on is not what we think. I mean, that's kind of what they all say, right? But it's more just, it's just this, you know, people are so memed by Hollywood that they don't understand reality at all anymore. This is what you see on the internet where it's like, you say you're gonna, like, you know, if I post about the show in the morning, people hit me up at 10 a.m. like, well, why isn't it on yet? You know what I mean? It's like people have no, if you say you're going to do something, like God forbid you're like having a conversation via a message board with a group of people, and you're like, oh yeah, well I'm working on this thing, right? And 2 days later, like other people are advertising it and just being like, if you don't get this done, you are back on your, it's so twisted, but
okay, yeah, I'll say this back. We covered a lot of areas, which is good. Now, I recommend this new guy, Bud Burrell, the new May Brussels Sherman Skolnick that Robert David Steele interviewed, and I posted on Fake Explorations, my Facebook page, and it's also on Ina and Bob. his sky is pretty good. He's the dullest face you ever seen. He hasn't cracked a smile in 40 years. But what this guy knows about Wall Street, having been involved with it so many decades, is very important. You'll hear new stuff. He even surprised Robert Steele, who claims to be for old agent, knew everything. But with Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, they never cover all of it. Tucker and them, they sit around complaining about everybody's duped and it was sort of a fucked up election, but they don't pursue it. They don't bring in Sidney Powell and they don't pursue the McLuhan things. You see, nobody's worth it unless they cover the whole spectrum of the scenario. If you just
say,
well, this is Biden, he's terrible and we gotta do something about it or we're doomed. And then you don't go into all the different aspects of what the Biden is, which is, you know, you gotta go through what I call the holy offices or what we are presenting from the different angles. It's incomplete and irrelevant. That's my
opinion. Yeah, they're all state actors. So, you know,
yeah.
Tucker is a great example of like the NSA or even CIA, but a little bit more what the NSA does, like the mind war thing, where it's like, well, we're going to use just the truth to brainwash people. And this is where people get really confused. Like I brought this up earlier a lot where it's like, well, how can people use the truth or the light to brainwash us? But it's actually one of the best ways, and it's not 100% nefarious. With Tucker Carlson, I'll say this, though. He's a master in neurolinguistic programming. I used to get kind of obsessed watching his shows, laughing my ass off because he's so funny. But then, like, 2-3 hours later, I would start having the most horrible, like, embedded thoughts play out in my head. Like, I would be walking down the street and be like, okay, like, we're going to see the end of the world, and I'm going to see these people die, and you know, like, we don't want immigrants in America. Like, just, like, crazy thoughts like that I don't even actually think in any fucking way. They're disgusting. But I was seeing them, like, really play out through my head. And, you know, just having these thoughts, like, well, he's kind of a good guy. He at least tells the truth. It's like, no, he's a fucking child of a billionaire. Like, doesn't mean he's a bad person, but, you know, these are just hired
actors.
What's
their purpose? What do they represent? What is the point of us being informed of how everybody's wrong and Tucker saying we're not being active enough to do something? And he just keeps going on with a new show and a new interview every show, like Rogan. They don't stop. They just keep putting out information. What is their point?
It's fear.
Information overload.
It's fear frequency, where it's like, you know, we keep people scared about what they already know, but like, no one else is saying, right? So we just keep keep people scared and just lock them into this matrix, and, it's a really good tactic. It's a really good tactic, because like, look at Tucker Carlson, right? Like, he's not scared. He's got a fucking suntan 24/7. Like, he's like a fucking, he's a pump. He looks like a pumpkin. He's a deadhead. He's a, you know, you can tell he fried his brain with LSD at his fucking Connecticut private school. Literally, you know?
And their media, what they do with their information overloads, they sabotage what they say are their values, family, neighborhood, community, or whatever they claim. It's all destroyed by any network.
Yeah, exactly. Just by networking and most broadcasting in general.
Yeah.
And I think here that these people, they may not personally know about McLuhan too much, but I think this is another like sort of Brockman-esque thing where it's just like the use of cybernetics for very bad purposes. Where like you said, Tucker Carlson, like he'll just sell these fake meme threads, but he would never actually just kind of, he would never have the balls to be like, well, sure, the election was a bit screwy. They've been screwy for about 20 years. Let's talk about, like, what's been wrong in each of them. He would never have the balls to do that. He wouldn't even have the balls to actually outright see. He just was like, you know, something bad happened, and now we're stuck with Joe Biden, the arm of the Chinese Communist Party, and he wants to have your kids cut off their penises when they have a bad headache. You know, like, just full on, like, that's like the 8 different fear embedments right there. Like, you listen to fucking one sentence of them talk and you're ready to kill somebody. It's really, really dangerous. I laugh when the left talks about, like, the danger of this stuff, but they're actually kind of right in a point. As I said, like, you listen to this shit and then you go out there and you're like, I'm a Christian terrorist. Like, I want to be. You get stoked on it. It's the electricity. It's the electricity of this stuff, like, living through the discarnate you. It's like a true electric shock.
Go ahead.
Just say
I think
Oh, that doesn't make noises.
That's just Breezy again. Little Breezy.
Little Breezy.
Yeah, he shows up healthy every night. Everything is terrible, but he's healthy and well-fed every night to tell us the next fucking problem, which is a distraction from the original problem he seems to represent.
I like to call this structural hypocrisy. You can't be part of the system without being a hypocrite. Because the system wants to be countercultural, you know? The system, like the culture of counterculture, is inherently hypocritical. You know?
You're trying to stay informed, and the whole structure of being informed is fallacious and undermining everything.
It's the same way that Christians, to take it back to like the beginning, right? It's the same way that Christians just like, you know, that we think Christ had to come to the world to show us truth because too many other people were putting too much faith in like demigods or false gods. And I even have trouble using the term demigod or false god because I do believe there's only one God. But it's this type of thing where it's like if you tend to think that like demons have actual power and that's not just God's power showing you the way, it is a form of worship in a sense. And I don't mean it's nefarious because everything in this world is some form of like worship, idol worship. But like to acknowledge anything, to acknowledge something isn't to worship it. But the first step in acknowledgement is sort of like this worship, and it either comes in like outright devotion or outright hatred. And the media is a great, great example of this. Where Blake, this is something Blake and I talk about endlessly because I'm from Massachusetts. I'm a liberal. I'm like a true, like radical centrist. It's disgusting. It's disgusting.
Radical centrist.
Yeah, I mean, I truly am, and I'll have like the furthest right and the furthest left point of views. Yeah, I'm too critical. It's like a culture of critique that's built into these like dialectic Protestant systems. And Blake always counters me really well with like, okay, yeah, like that's like the right way to think, but like, you know, we do have emotions, and emotionally we have to sort of choose a side at times. It doesn't mean we just stick with it, but we do have to choose a side. And I think this is a good metaphor for working within media. Where you just have to tune yourself. Once again, you just have to focus on tuning, and everything really, really comes into play here, where, you know, you start getting these crazy channels flying at you, but you realize, like, okay, that's just a channel going through me. I don't need to fucking let the electricity rock me and start, you know, yelling about, like, trans children and how sad it is, you know? It's like, it is really sad, but to go on, like, these weird rhetorical fucking puke sprees about it, you might as well just be talking, like, neo-Nazi trash half the time. You know, this is something I think many people don't realize being so discarnate in this media landscape thing where it's just, you know, it's not us who are doing this half the time. It's either possession or it's just straight up like frequency abuse.
Yeah, you know that old line, what if they gave a war and no one came? Well, what if the information networks broadcast today or tonight and nobody came? Nobody turned on any media.
Well, so I actually see that happening in a sense where I talk about this a lot. I don't talk about it on the show, but I truly think social media is already over. And I've been saying this since about November, but really more since January 6th. And it's like, so Twitter's become the news. Right? It's just like they're banning like thousands of people daily for no reason. And it's just all these state actors and fucking like literal like constructive feds. And the difference is though, the people who are not aware of their role in the intelligence agencies, these people who, you know, like you and I, who are just normal, right? They're realizing they don't want to be on the news 24/7. You know, they're like, okay, this actually kind of sucks. I liked it better when this was just like a courtyard of me and my friends hanging out. So then it's like, you know, Instagram's just the mall now. It's just like, you know, it's like fake yoga videos with girls doing sex moves and like, you know, just like people looking like monsters. It's twisted, you know. All these social media sites, they're just dead. And they're just literal channels for demons to like bomb your brain out with memes. You know, like what do you do on social media? You send memes back and forth to your friends and you're just like, aha, this is funny, this means nothing. It's like, no, you're fucking enacting deep mind control codes on each other.
and soul control coding. So what I see happening is I see, and I'm seeing it happen, people are starting to realize that these state-sanctioned, allowed media sites are what they are. Well, what are they talking about? They're talking about wanting to get into ham radio. They're talking about, oh, you're, you know, people say to me, like, Zoomers, I said, they're like, oh, you're 37. You used to talk on the telephone when you grew up, didn't you? It fucking blows my mind a little bit. It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't have the internet growing up. I spent like 6 hours a night on, with friends in Europe on the phone and shit like that. Probably feds in like Iowa pretending they were some fucking German or something, you know? Like, no, straight up. That's one of the things with like, this punk rock MK Ultra crap. You start thinking about like, wow, you know, when I was like 11, 12, I know so many older, like men and women both who kind of like took me under their wing, didn't do any creepy stuff, didn't try to, were really kind of nice. And it's like, man, 3/4 of them were fucking paid to deal with my annoying ass. You know, like, if they had the choice, they'd be like, yo, motherfucker, shut up. Like, all you do is fucking read left and right. Get out of my face, you little maniac. You know, so I actually feel bad for a lot of these, like, federal agents in the underground, man. They got to deal with, like, annoying little fucking psychopaths like me. It's not cool. You know?
I did it on the radio for years.
Well,
you know, we got to start putting up signs up in New York. Defund Patti Smith. See what happens.
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny you bring her up. I've never liked her at all. And I was just thinking, yeah, exactly. I was thinking about her today. She's like one of the biggest feds in the fucking game.
Right.
She really is.
She fucked up Fred
really,
of MC5, whatever her guy was.
Yeah, Fred Sonic Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's just, she's so fucking cringe always, but it's like, these big actors like that, they don't really work.
I use myself as a litmus test, Zach. I've encountered her in different places in my 15 years in New York, and ended up talking to her, and pretty quickly she'd get irritated. So the last time I saw him, Ralph Nader came to Barnes & Noble down on Union Square, and he had a stupid little book of stories of American history or something, cartoon stuff, and she's standing beside me. So after a while, I turned to her and I said, Ralph needs to know a little bit more about Marshall McLuhan. And she quickly left the building. So that was my final little victory. Every time I told her something, she left. She couldn't take me, even though she didn't know me.
Yeah, but I can believe that. You know, I worked the Nader campaign in 2000, and it sort of was one of the biggest red pills I ever took. I don't even want to talk about that one. But I saw Nader speak in 2007. Yeah, it's summer 2007, right? Summer 2008, a few months before the election, I'm sorry, in Columbus, Ohio. And, he gave this really, you know, Nader is such a glowy, too. He's such a fucking fed. And, he gave this speech where he was just like, you know, if you want to vote for the real anti-war candidate, vote for John McCain. Because Barack Obama wants to nuke children. Like, he just went in full Alex Jones style. I'm not even kidding. It's about, like, Obama as the bomber. Just, like, all this crazy, like, early meme threading. That actually kind of fits in well with Clinton stuff about Ron Paul in 08. The 08 election was a great, you know, as was 04 and 00. That's when they started getting really weird. But yeah. 08 was like a great testing ground just for perception, right? I'll never forget, I was at Hampshire College, hanging out with my friend Phil, who actually was just texting me, Dr. Phil, got to give him a shout out. And the night Obama won, oh, this is so degenerate. I feel disgusting telling this, but I'm just going to be straight up honest, man. There was like this fucking drug dealer kid across from his dorm who was like just this fucking research chem death case who would like do yoga in the tree and fall out of the tree and not even fucking notice. Like just true losership. And he was like, I think he was gay, but like not actually gay, just so drugged out he had like convinced himself that he liked men. And we went there to buy some weed or something, and he stepped out, and my homie who was there, not Phil, I'm not gonna name him, but was like, yo, you should look in his drawer. So I opened the drawer, and of course it was just like thousands of dollars and a ton of drugs. So we took a massive bag of ketamine. And I didn't really do that crap. I never really had, or I never really been big into it. And, we kind of went back, did a bunch of it, listened to Villalobos 12 inches, right? And then, you know, we're like totally K'd out, like on the floor, like seeing snakes, that type of garbage, just like total dorm room disgust and degeneracy. And, one of his roommates was like, yo, Obama just won. So we turned on the TV and like we were fucked up out of our minds, and it was the thing where Will.i.am came to greet Obama as a hologram, and we were just like really in this fucked up zone where we were kind of like, oh, this is them telling us that like there's holograms among us in our reality, right? And we were, you know, at first we all thought it was just some drugged out garbage, but it stuck. And then as the word got out that Obama had won, and you know, we're at Hampshire College, so that's like a literal drum circle college. And, on the main lawn, there was about like 400, 500 kids just like beating on drums, getting naked, just being fucking nasty degenerates. So we wore the PA out. We started playing like deep house music, you know, because it's like Obama, right? Everyone loves black people now. So we hit them with some deep house. And, it was actually one of like the more fun times I ever had. Just kind of DJing, and it wasn't even like that serious, but it was like maybe like 600-700 kids just losing their minds. We were playing kind of like New York vocal deep house classics, like Moving On Up, those kind of jams where you can just like learn the chorus quick and yell along. And it was a little nuts to see these degenerates, like, and of course I'm including myself in that too, but I was, you know, a bit too counterculture for like the pure hippie types at that time, and I was just laughing at them like ripping their clothes off and jump. They were, you know, these kids were rich kids, so some of them were like throwing their money in the air and just like making a show of like them not wanting to have money. It was really, really fucked up and nasty, to be honest. But I do just remember just being like, wow, this is a paradigm shift, what they're doing. This is like the first media it was just a great training ground for what the internet turned into. And I think this is when people should really realize that, like, you know, Donald Trump and Barack Obama might actually really dislike each other. I don't know or care, but they work for the same people, and they might think they work for different people because they have their own money, but you can see the way these elections work. And just the way they thread perception, again, like George Bush and Al Gore, same thing. Any two people who run, they're sort of the same arm of the same bullshit, and the way it works is they need to create a dialectic, so of course they need to have them actually hate each other and fight. But, yeah, just the 08 one was, it was almost like the internet in reality to bring us, like, fully discarnate and onto the internet as our reality. Obama is really kind of the figurehead in this, where he's like the real, he's not the first living meme, like John F. Kennedy was a fucking living meme, you know? Adolf Hitler was a living meme. But he's sort of this first, like, hey, motherfucker looks like an alien. He looks like an alien from a 1980s movie. This is like all done on, he's probably an actual hologram. There might not even be a human named Barack Obama. As far as
well,
we know.
Ian says Obama was murdered in the summer 2008, and a double became a president. Hillary killed the real Obama. That's why the Obama who was president, a double, was dull, and he was killed a couple years into it. So we're looking at the second or third Obama double. But here I want to close with this statement, not close my part. Here's the most astounding statement from Ian. Ian says that Barry Goldwater was very instrumental in the Kennedy assassination, and his main assistant was Ralph Nader. That is
I
that one.
Yes, whoa. Thank you. Yeah, he's the supreme glowy. He glows so hard. He I mean, come on, Ralph Nader is just a thread. He's just a perception threader. You know, like he got famous for.
You look him up, he did a lot of great things, you know, the seatbelt, the Earth Day, you know, Wikipedia lists all his achievements. No one would believe that he came from some weird younger environment, right-wing environment, and was involved in killing Kennedy. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing Ian's ever said. I just want to put that on record.
I think it's really true, and I think so. One thing I've been working on personally.
I don't know Zach to say, no problem. Of course Ralph did that,
Yeah, I mean, one thing I've been working on personally, especially for the last 2 weeks, is kind of trying to correctly, like, do a history of counterculture via
these agencies. And, I mean, that just makes perfect sense to me at the moment. And the thing is, when you get into this kind of stuff, it's like, I don't even care if it's actually true. That makes a great, great fucking meme, you know?
Yeah, and new material. That's right. New memes.
Yeah, well, and at this point, it's like, what? You're gonna, like, let Alex Jones, like, fucking run, like, the actual, like,
yeah.
Like, cause Alex Jones, he's a great comedian, right? But then he just loses it on this dumb, like, you've been hoodwinked, and you're gonna die! You're gonna die! It's like, it's so stupid, it's so yeah, it's, you know, it's just, I think one thing Mirror University is definitely doing rhetorically, is trying to deal with some of these structures in a sense and let people know it's okay. It's okay. Like, even if you turn into a fascist for a few days, just check yourself. Just fucking exercise a bit. Do some yoga and
yeah,
you won't be
okay
so fucking
to think wrong. No problem. That's never affected anything. Well, so you think wrong all you want.
Well, I mean, I don't know if all you... Well, yeah, think wrong all you want. Because the thing is... But then the more you think wrong, well, the rightness is right there. And this might be a little bit, like, shitty. I guess I've had, like, 20 fucking years to sit around thinking wrong. So, of course, I'm trying to think right at this point. But I do think, you know, if you don't allow yourself to think wrong, you're never going to actually think correctly. You know,
correct.
You're just going to be stuck in this thing.
There it is.
I think
we should quote Zach in our documentary, An Answer to Curtis. He's got David Graeber, some anthropologist, about how you make your world and all that, and you can make anything you want. Well, first have to learn how to think wrong.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, the Mirror University exists to kind of tear down all these, like, substructures we have, but not to just completely discard them, but just kind of to break them up and rebuild them. In order to try to rebuild the postmodern library of Alexandria, you know, that's kind of.
I think we should be called Remirror University. Remirror.
I think one of the things here is, you know, we have like the doorway university. We have the shelf university. You know, like the Mirror University is a small part of a much much bigger ecology.
Yeah, the department should be a house, the bathroom department, the shelf.
Mean, look, like, Bob, you and I already have the bathroom department so well down, it's disgusting. It's disgusting, like, I'm actually embarrassed of it. So,
bathroom.
I think the more, you know, the more we dwell on how do the universities work, how do they not work, and how do we want to structure ourselves within these ancient structures and within these postmodern structures, the university just kind of forms fully. I think maybe we should play a song to end it. Anyone else got anything to say?
Well, how about the one that I was going to play? This is religious. This is the greatest gospel singer. And it got cut off at the beginning because I thought nothing was played. Could I play mine or do you have one you have to play?
I don't have to play. I have one queued up, but you can go ahead, Bob. I got you.
Yeah, this fits the mood. This is our mood, okay?